Welcome to the Friday, March 15th Players Podcast. Nick Tamaro here, deputizing for Peter Thomas Fornatel, who is in parts unknown. Well, actually, we know he's at Cheltenham. I'm sure he's living it up, because one thing we know about Pete is anywhere he lands, he certainly lives it up. So I am here hosting this edition of the Players Podcast, excited to talk about the coast-to-coast pick five as well as the pick six for Saturday at Aqueduct, and what'll be probably a slightly shorter version of the Players Podcast, but still plenty of content coming your way. And joining me to do so, the one and only Jonathan Kinchin. Jonathan, what I wanted to start off with, because I don't love the whole, hey, how's it going? Oh, it's good. How are you? Is that we're getting close to tournament time. I know you're somebody who swapped your affiliations for tournament teams with great regularity, and that's totally fine. We're all allowed to do it. I'm very excited because I wasn't a real alum of a school that had any athletics, and I am a grad school alum of U of H, so I'm gonna plan on taking my little victory lap at the very least for being an alum of the school that's number one in the country.
Look, yeah, I mean, I still bleed burnt orange, but you're right. I see what you're hinting at there. When Duke plays in this house, they say, "Happy wife, happy life." It's like I went to Texas. I'm a sports guy. I used to if Texas loses, it's a little annoying to me. If Duke loses, my wife literally goes into a little bit of a depression. So last night on the flight back from the Bahamas, we had to watch the Duke Blue Devils lose to NC State. So the rest of my night was completely ruined.
Yeah, no good. Never a good thing. It was like there was an old episode. I'm probably making myself look like a dipshit by saying this. There was an old Sex and the City episode. We watched all of Sex and the City during COVID. There was an old episode where one of the women is dating a guy who is obsessed with the Mets. And so Mets season ends, and she's so excited that the Mets season is over. And he's like, because he will not engage in any kind of intense physical activity while the Mets season is going on. So, which you can imagine. And so then the season ends, and he says, "Oh, well, now I got to watch the Knicks game." And she's like, "Yeah, no, I'm out." So that's how sports affiliations can become very problematic, right? Sports fans know you better have a short memory. You better have a pretty short fuse for stuff like that. But anyway, now we'll get into the more important topics that begin with the coast-to-coast pick five, and that starts with race number 10 at Gulfstream on Saturday afternoon, a 5:36 Eastern time start to it. And a pretty decent race to start, Jonathan, where we're going to have a horse coming back off a long layoff in Arthur's Ride, who I thought hinted at having some really serious ability last year. And in retrospect, those defeats to Disarm, Instant Coffee, and then that win over Dreamlike, it looks awfully good in retrospect.
Yeah, you'd like to think with a horse like this, it showed so much talent. You know, they probably took their time. There's obviously an issue there. But if you just look at like kind of age and its relation to age and maturity with speed figures, you know, this horse ran pretty fast as a 2-year-old up in Saratoga, then had a little bit of a break, comes back, first start as a 3-year-old, runs fast again. And you got to think that this horse is likely to have grown up. Now you do have to kind of work through the, is this horse, you know, fit off the long break situation. But if you look on XBTV, there's a few works back ago where this horse worked with Casa Creed. If you're going to work with a horse like Casa Creed, albeit on the dirt, he's a turf horse. Still, if you're going to work with a horse like Casa Creed, you got to be pretty darn good with the old warrior like that. I'm going to single the 5 Arthur's Ride, assuming this horse will be ready to run off the break. And I'll use the 1. What is this? What are we doing here? I'll let you pronounce the 1 as a backup horse, as a B horse.
Cape Trafalgar, yeah, who did have a little bit of traffic trouble last time out. He's a horse who I think the public is going to embrace pretty readily. Obviously, his best races are definitely good enough to win here. And like most Safi Joseph Jr. trainees, he might be just a little bit better in South Florida than anywhere else. But I agree. I thought Arthur's Ride was I don't want to call him a standout, but I'll be absolutely stunned if this horse is the third choice when all is said and done. I don't see the public really going for full screen. I know IRAD is on, and when you're a morning line maker, and I'll start these activities again soon where I'm under heavy and intense scrutiny the way I like it. You always build in a few extra points for horses that IRAD is on, but this is one that I have a hard time believing is going to take an awful lot of money. So I do think Arthur's Ride and Cape Trafalgar end up being the two favorites. And I agree completely. I didn't have any really great much to add to that. Big Martini will probably be forwardly placed. I don't really see him staying the mile against this caliber. So 5-1 for me as well. I'll probably use him a little more equally than what you laid out, just fearing that Arthur's Ride could end up needing a race off the layoff. The second leg is the 5th race at Santa Anita, which is at 6.5 furlongs on the turf. This is the turf straightaway, not the downhill. And a relatively good field, I think, all things considered, which really depends a lot of, in many respects, on how strongly you feel about Can't Sleep, who is a second-time starter by Om, who ran very well on debut, came from well off of it to win. And, you know, Jonathan, I'm interested in hearing your take, being somebody who's followed Santa Anita for quite some time. I think it's very hard to make up significant ground in these one-turn straightaway turf sprint races. I think they generally are very conducive to front-running types. So that was a pretty big effort overall by Can't Sleep. I wanted to use him. I like the running lines of a horse like Recalcitrant, who's found her way into some pretty negative pace scenarios, and I can see her maybe rebounding a little bit. So they were sort of the two for me that I wanted to mainly focus on. I'll use the Shishala probably more as a backup in that second leg. Where did you land?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to use two horses in here. I'm going to use the 8 Can't Sleep that you talked about. You know, look, closing into a slow pace, second start off a layoff. I agree. I think turf sprints in general, you don't want to come from too far out of it. I think Can't Sleep, you know, maybe hopefully second time away from there, can find herself a little bit closer. I don't want her to make that kind of deep run. And hopefully she'll have some more pace to close into to make her job a little bit easier. And then I want to use the 4. What'd you say that one was called again? Jeepers, creepers. It's too early for me, Nick.
Recalcitrant. Yeah.
I got there.
Yeah.
You know, look, it's not the downhill, right? I understand that, but I still do agree that speed and fade going 8 furlongs, speed and fade, and then running, whether it be 7 at Belmont when we get back there, or a 6 or whatever it might be. Not so much the 5.5 or the 5 variety of turf sprints, but just that speed and fade from a mile cutting back a little bit is something I do like. So I'll use those two horses, the 8 and the 4 as A horses. And then I'll probably toss in the 3 Quick Kate as a B just in case.
Yeah, I like it. Obviously, we saw the race very similarly, and I don't have much of an argument with any of that. Felt like they were the right horses, and we viewed it similar from a pace perspective as well. This feels like a race that's going to have some real pace. I think what we're trying to do is take the best speed and best closer. I think that's a fair way to sum it all up, because I do think Recalcitrant has the option of sitting just off of it, coming now back on the cutback, and we know that that our top pick, Can't Sleep, is going to be doing a lot of running from the back of the pack. That takes us to the third leg, the 6th race at Santa Anita, which is at 6 furlongs on the main track, and a relatively short-priced favorite looming here with the 6, Matanzas Creek, although I do think there'll be plenty of support for Hey Brother as well, coming in off a maiden win. Pretty nice group of relatively evenly matched horses here, huh?
Yeah, you know, this is a tough one. I got a stronger opinion late, so I'm going to actually just try to lock this race up. I'm going to use the 4, 5, and 6. All is A's. I can make a significant case for all of them. And I can make a significant case for all of them not to run well in a situation like that. I just want to tie it up. I feel like I can't lose this race with those three horses. The one that I will, you know, focus on a little bit more is the 5 Fifth Street, who back in July of his 3-year-old year was running numbers that are competitive with what these horses have run this year. And I think that is something you want to take into account. If Fifth Street can take a step forward, I call it the kind of frosted gun runner effect. And by no means am I comparing this horse to that. But that jump from 2 to 3 is a big jump. But I think the jump from 3 to 4 with talented colts can be even more significant, because a lot of times we see the really good ones get kind of whisked away to stud. And I think that when you allow a 3-year-old colt to turn into a 4-year-old, you can see some drastic improvements in their figures, and that could be something we'd see from Fifth Street. But I don't trust them necessarily off the break, so I'm going to use 4, 5, and 6.
I like it. I think that should cover all the bases. Obviously, Matanzas Creek, I think there has to be some level of concern that he might be a horse that doesn't really want to win. His lone win at Del Mar did come when he set a relatively modest pace. He beat Judge Miller that day, who, you know, looks like he could be any kind at this point. But yeah, I think there's plenty of reason to be on a couple of potential backups. It does feel like Matanzas Creek made out like a bandit at the post position draw, being outside, given the amount of speed he has. So we'll see how Frankie Dettori reacts to that in the third leg of this coast-to-coast pick 5. Let's go to leg number 4, which is the Nightcap at Gulfstream Park on a 12-race program. And we've got a full field set to go postward here, at least 12, if not more. And the 13, who could potentially get in off the AE list, would be a dangerous horse as well. This looks like a particularly tough way to close things out. And, you know, there are horses in here that I have – have tried at different times in the past. I did think that Better Bet ran a pretty bang up race in on debut and feels like a horse who could definitely take a step forward. I thought Fly Right was really interesting going to Fernando Abreu a couple of starts back, did finally get on turf and ran an improved race immediately last time out. I hate to be overly obvious, but it felt like if Better Bet improves as a second-time starter, most of these Todd Pletcher horses in South Florida do, he'd be pretty tough to beat. I did want to use Fly Right as well. I didn't know what to make of the first-time starter by Mendelsohn for Chad Brown. Copernicus, who's drawn towards the outside, he's going to have to overcome a pretty difficult set of circumstances, I would think, to win this race, given the likelihood of a wide trip. So I wanted to mainly stick to 1 and 4 here and keep it somewhat simple. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to single the one in here, actually. And obviously, like you mentioned, if those AEs draw in, whether Todd or Chad draw in, that changes the complexion quite a bit. But if those guys don't draw in, I thought the inside ran extremely well last time. And I thought that it's, 13-1 for connections that aren't lighting up any Hall of Fame ballots as of yet. I think that that was taking some money first time out. And I think the way the horse ran, I think you can understand the horse is well meant. And I love when Irad, Flavian, Joel, whoever kind of comes to your mind as those kind of really kind of top-notch turf riders draw inside because they're going to ride with confidence. They're going to stay down there. You could get stopped, but they're going to give you a legitimate chance to get the best ground-saving trip possible. I'm going to single the one Better Bet.
Well, there's your strong opinion that you were willing to go a little wider in the third leg at Santa Anita so that you could get to that. So I like it. That's a good way to move us along into the last leg of this sequence, which is race number 7 at Santa Anita. And in that last leg of it, we're going to have a group of horses going on the turf, 1 1/8 miles, and a good size field here as well. So how are we going to close this thing out?
Yeah, this is going to have to be a spread for me. And look, a lot of times when I'm looking at these sequences, and it's really kind of even changed a lot for me more. I look more at how do I want to play this sequence more than who are the horses that I like in this sequence. I think so often I used to play pick fives where I try to just be so dead on the nail in every race. And what I've learned is that in a 5-race sequence, there's going to be a random result. There is going to be a result that I can't find on paper. Which race is it going to come in, and can I protect myself in that race? Because so often I've tried to direct hit every race, bang, 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 almost like you're playing in a contest or, I've tried to get away from that to a certain extent. I'm going to spread in here. I'm going to use the 2, 3, 4, 6, and 7. 2, 3, 4, 6, and 7. Obviously, I don't have a strong opinion if I'm using that many horses. This feels like a random race to me. There's nothing I can really lean on. Nothing that if I was going to single someone, it'd be the 6. But that doesn't feel like a trustworthy situation for a horse who got loose last time and still couldn't win. I love a loose speed horse, but I'll spread in that last leg.
Yeah, no argument from me whatsoever. I felt like in many ways the horse to beat looked like Let Sheamus Go. He's got a little bit of trust concern there, so I don't blame you for not really wanting to dive in fully. I've always been intrigued by horses like Nitty, who goes second off a layoff, second time North America for Leonard Powell. Had a little bit of trouble in his first start and got a little bit of money in there too. Went off 8-1 in a big field. So I think there's reason to believe that he's going to run better. I do think Bartholdi will get a good trip from the inside, blinkers on, seemed to take to the turf without issue and ran well first time LASIK. So yeah, there was something to like there as well. I didn't care much, and you didn't mention, is it a horse that you were going to use for the 5 Indispensable, who doesn't look like he has any real turf pedigree. He was a horse that I could see myself just sort of omitting. And I would imagine that Let Sheamus Go will be particularly tough in here if he's able to control on the front end. It's not the easiest trip to wire, but the quickest way to get there is on the front end, no doubt about it. So that's a way that we will close it out. And the Coast to Coast Pick 5 sequence, of course, is brought to you by First Racing. We're very happy to have a partnership with them to bring you some previews of this wager on a weekly basis. So, Jonathan, we're now going to transition over to the Big A and take a look at the Pick 6 sequence for Saturday afternoon, which begins in race 3 on just an 8-race card as the winter drags on and leads us towards the spring, which ultimately will include the Wood Memorial, which comes up 3 weeks from Saturday. In the first leg of the race number 3, 2:20 Eastern time at a mile on the main track, I like the 1 Eerie Man in addition to the 3 Savage Spirit. They were the two horses for me. I felt like Eerie Man probably didn't get the best go of it being inside. I'm not really sure how Dead the Rail may have been on February 18th, but this is a horse who's at least run consistently. And Charlie Baker wins at a high percentage because he spots his horses realistically. And he's moving this horse down to the 25 level. The blinkers are going on as well. I would imagine that putting the journeyman Isaac Castillo on board, he's hoping for a little bit more aggressive ride early. Didn't really have much clever to say about this race, and I'm kind of hoping you do, but I'm kind of not going to be surprised if you don't.
I'm going to add the 7 in here. I agree with your the horses you want to use, the 1 and the 3. Like I said, you try to avoid some randomness in some of these sequences. The 7, Manny Penny. If you look at this horse's last 4 races, I'm talking about parking lot wide, parking lot wide, parking lot wide, not all the way in the parking lot, but pretty darn far. I know a little bit about the A train now, boss. I've been hanging out in New York, going down, hitting the A train. So almost like the Manny Penny could have got on the A train. But this horse, I think, is probably a little bit better than the paper suggests. I don't think Manny Penny is going to be winning any races on a consistent basis, but I do think that in a race like this with this type of group, could kind of get you somewhere at a price I'll use defensively in a race that I think is pretty wide open.
Yeah, totally agree. I think he's a reasonable horse to throw in as well. Capable on the drop also. And these are connections that generally aren't going to get a lot of support at the windows. That is Mary Elise Coffee, the trainer. Second leg, race number 4, 7 furlongs on the main track. And in here, we've got a pretty good group coming together when you get a horse like Midlaner, who's shown some ability against allowance types in New York, taking on the likes of Ouster, who we've not seen since a poor run at Saratoga last summer. But he was a horse who really hinted at having stakes caliber ability. He failed in his lone stake opportunity, but Mark Hennig is still going to try and take advantage of the conditions that he retains as a New York bred. Where did you stand on Ouster and everybody else?
Yeah, I mean, Ouster's got some races in here that are like, you know, grade 3 type of races, graded stakes types races in his past. He comes in here off of a break, right? Hasn't run since August in Saratoga. But, I think he's a capable type. You get Kendrick, smart rider, especially at Aqueduct in the winter. I feel like he's always making great decisions and often outsmarting the competition. He does need to break a little bit better. He seems to have some gait. Not all the time, but he does have a few gate issues. Ouster, I'll use Ouster as an A horse, and I'll also use the 3 Midlander, who, I'm a sucker for speed going 7. I think horses that have speed or can be forward in 7 furlong dirt races, I typically give them a little bit of an upgrade to what they might look like on paper. I think it's a very advantageous style when you're going those distances, whether it's in New York or in California or anywhere.
Yeah, interesting. And on the pace conversation in this race, you know, if you're a pace figure user, it might be a little bit more of a battle early. We're really going to see how much rider intent factors into this. This is an enormous jockey upgrade on the 2 Secret Rules, who's really done his best work throughout his career at Aqueduct. And Manny Franco's getting on board for the Bug, who was on last time. They didn't have the cleanest of trips in that March 3rd tilt. I also think Secret Rules is probably a bit better on a dry racetrack. So I actually picked him. I've lost money on Ouster a couple of times and been annoyed by it. So I think maybe I'm holding a little bit too much personal animus against him. I also think he might need a race off the layoff. This is not one of Hennig's strong suits in bringing horses back from a lengthy break. You'd also have to think that something to some extent went wrong. Obviously, it wasn't too serious because he's back in about 7 months. But he's a horse I thought I could maybe take on a little bit. And so I ended up siding with Secret Rules, who I'm hoping just gets that blast off trip, right? I'm hoping they just go and try and put everybody else on the chase. I feel like he's been at his best when he's been able to utilize some of that natural speed. And now 2nd off the layoff, perhaps he's found himself exactly in that scenario. He is coming back a little quickly off the somewhat poor run at 7-1 against Disarmed. But I think there are some reasonable excuses for that effort. Let's go to leg number 3, which is race 5. At a mile on the main track, and a pretty tough bunch coming together here in terms of how to formulate a strong opinion. It didn't look like there was a ton of speed in here. We have Adam Rice taking over the training of Barnstorming, who's 6-5 on the morning line. And these horses continue to perform at a pretty high level, regardless of the first name in the trainer line. It seems like the last name is what matters when push comes to shove. And I did think Barnstorming would be tough on his best day. I don't love the race he ran last time out, but there's no denying it came against significantly better horses. And even though this horse really, Jonathan, hasn't taken a step forward since Linda got him, it feels like the races that he's run are good enough if he's able to just duplicate it.
Yeah, it's funny. It's one of those situations where, you know, I've said earlier that I've tried to become more of a sequence generated opinion formulator, right? Like this is a situation where if I don't single Barnstorming, in order to feel like I have the coverage in this race, I have to use a lot of horses. And it being a dollar pick six, and you know, at least as of now, there's not a carryover. Like I don't like to do that. I don't want my ticket to become outsized to what the actual reward could be from it. I'm going to single the three Barnstorming. Like you mentioned, this horse, I don't look at the trainer change. Like whatever this horse was doing with Linda, Adam can text, call, and find out. Hey, this doesn't like this in the morning. Try this. Do a rider with this in the morning. Don't feed that. Has ulcers. Give this. Oh, watch his feet. That front left one. Da-da. Whatever it might be, whatever the information is that Linda had, she's going to share it. And this horse should be able to run similar numbers to what Barnstorming has done. And if he does so, I think he's going to win against this group.
What about South Street? This is a horse, first off, acclaimed by David Jacobson, coming out of the barn of Eduardo Jones. And Eduardo Jones doesn't need me beating up on him. He's a 2% trainer. This is obviously a much higher percentage barn. This horse, early in his career, when with Bill Mott, looked like he could be a decent type. A second dam is Sweet Cat of Mine. You see him being bred, of course, by Pam and Marty Wygod. He's run well enough in his last couple, but I was just a little unconvinced of him going a mile. What did you think?
Look, another exercise I'll do is I'll take a favorite in a sequence and I'll pretend the horse isn't running, and then I'll look at the race. What would I do if this horse wasn't in here? And I do that because sometimes these horses just show up and don't have any, they just don't show up. If Barnstorming just comes out there and jogs around the track and is pulled up in his ease and runs ninth, I try to look at it through that lens. And to your point, yes, South Street was the one I thought was interesting. You're getting the blinkers on. The horse did run pretty well last time for Eduardo Jones. You'd like to think there could be a step forward for David Jacobson. But the reason I didn't use is because it doubles my ticket price by adding another horse in a situation that I was going to single. It's the only reason I didn't do it. If you have another opinion elsewhere, or you can be a little skinnier in other spots, I would absolutely use South Street.
Totally get it. I think that makes perfect sense. And you want to be, of course, more judicious with your dollars and looking at these sequences, no question about it. Let's go to leg number four, the Cicada, at 6 furlongs on the main track, where we're undoubtedly going to have a huge favorite here. In number one, Galia Princess, who was second last out in the Ruthless, bested a couple of horses who come right back, including Valuaria and Reconcile, who draw towards her outside. How much are you concerned about this inside position, or do you think it's just that Galia Princess is going to be too much?
I mean, I kind of like it because I think that her weapon is the fact that she's fast, her speed. And when you're down in the inside like this, not that I don't trust Manny to make great decisions if he was drawn towards the outside, it kind of forces his hand to give the ride that I believe is going to be the most advantageous. The only other horse, in my opinion, that can beat Galia Princess would be a horse like Miss Harriet or Anna's Wish, and they have a similar style. So, you know, I think you could take and I think that she's faster. She's got in her last race, you know, she faced some adversity and ran well in the Ruthless. I just want to see her stick it to him. Get out there, pop away from there, make Anna's Wish and Miss Harriet chase you around there. Even a horse like Reconcile, make them chase you around there, and let's just see who's going to have the most energy left at the end of the race. And by the way that Brad Cox trains his horses, Ask Nick's Go, he you know, he's kind of the Bob Baffert of the East, right? Like, I mean, they run in the morning, and I think that they have a pretty significant bottom to them. So I think she should be tough from the inside.
Yeah, this is a 5-horse race, but it's going to be interesting to see how the first quarter mile shakes out, because I can't imagine they're putting Miss Harriet on a van to come up and spectate through the first half mile. And if she shows speed, and we'll see exactly what we get from Reconcile, who may be made out best at the draw, being on the outside. Galia Princess went a pace last out. I mean, I'm a Timeform US believer that was very strong. I mean, 132, 120, first two pace figures, red, which means she was very much entitled to tiring late and lost to a horse in Helena's Forte, who ran perfectly fine. So I'm going to be intrigued by how they run here in the opening half mile and see just how quick this pace may get. Especially a lot of these horses have had opportunities of late on dry racetracks for the first time. And I believe the weather is supposed to be decent enough tomorrow. So we'll see how it ends up playing out, but I'm very interested in how this all could go. We'll see how it shakes out here in race number six, on to the seventh, first half of the late double. And in this spot, we are going to have a group of one other than New York breds going postward. It's a field of nine. Jonathan, where did you land here?
Yeah, this is the random protector for me. I've got two singles back to back. I wasn't very clear in the last race. I'm going to single the one Gallia Princess. I realized that I didn't say that out loud. Race seven, I'm going to spread a little bit. I'm going to use the one Ghost Bustin, the two Foxy Kara, the three Liberty Flame, the four Mooly, and the seven Little Lindsay. I'm going to try to catch a little something here. This is one of those situations where I feel like they could run the race seven times. There could be seven different winners in all seven of those different races. Not a strong opinion here.
Yeah, agreed. I thought it was a kind of a grab bag. I thought George's Vice might be a little interesting as well. First time Adam Rice with a good effort, two back. Poor run last time out. Let's get to the nightcap at a mile. Starter allowance runners going postward here. Gentleman Joe, for me, first off the claim by David Jacobson. Looked like a major player. I thought I could make a case for Mason Mania as well, but it's my old buddy Skylander who I've landed on, who's going to be a bit of a price. He's coming out of an allowance race that I thought was just much, much too tough for him. That also came during a stretch on that Gotham Day card where it was very advantageous to be forwardly placed. So looking for him to run a bit better this time around. Where did you go in the nightcap?
Yeah, I'm going to use four horses. I'm going to use Gentleman Joe. I like when good claiming trainers, and by no means am I putting Rick Dutro in a claiming trainer category. I just think he does good at claiming horses. I think when you have two good claiming trainers off of each other, I like that. I feel like there's something about those horses that these two sharp operations like. There's something there. I'll use the two Gentleman Joe. The four, I like your Skylander. The six, American Law. I'll use a seven, Just Call Ray. I'm still a sucker for reclaims from high percentage trainers like Wayne Potts. He never got the horse to win in the recent stint that he had him, but he did run well enough and had some nice figures. Lost him for 20, came back and got him for 32. I think that shows a little bit of confidence. And I like the outside draw, kind of drawn towards the outside of the main competition, and should be ignored a little bit on the board as well. So I'll use that horse as well to kind of wrap up the sequence.
Agreed. Fun way to wrap up this pick six sequence at Aqueduct on Saturday afternoon. We'll put our picks all together and make sure they get sent out to all of our In the Money Plus subscribers. Jonathan, I really appreciate it. And I think we did all right in Pete's absence, as I know we would.
Boss man, it's never a problem. Talk to you soon.
Sounds great, my friend. Thanks to all of you. This has been the Friday, March 15th Players Podcast for Jonathan Kinchin, Nick Tamaro here. Until next time, best of luck.